Nirahaṃ kṛtir nirmamaśca Nirdvandva samadrik svadrik Pratyak prashantad hir dhira Prashantur miri vodadi Nirahaṃ kṛtir Without false ego. Nirmama. Without material affection. Cha. And. Nirdvandva. Without duality. Samadrik. Seeing equality. Svadrik. Seeing himself. Pratyak. Turned inward. Prashanta, perfectly composed. Dhi, mind. Dhira, sober, not disturbed. Prashanta, calmed. Urmi, whose waves. Eva, like Udadi, the ocean. Translation of Srila Prabhupada. Thus, he gradually became unaffected by the false ego of a material identity and became free from material affection. Undisturbed, equal to everyone, and without duality, he could understand, he could indeed see himself also. His mind was turned inward and was perfectly calm, like an ocean unagitated by waves. I will read the verse before because it says, does he gradually, so does what? I will first read the verse before so we can get the whole picture. It says, the verse before says, he fixed his mind upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parabrahman, who is beyond the cause and effect, who manifests the three modes of material nature, who is beyond those three modes, and who is perceived only through unfailing devotional service. So he fixed this mind, thus, next verse, thus he gradually became unaffected by the false ego of material identity and became free from material affection. Undisturbed, equal to everyone, and without duality, he could indeed see himself also. His mind was turned inward and was perfectly calm, like an ocean unagitated by waves. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. When one's mind is in full Krishna consciousness and one fully engages in rendering devotional service to the Lord, he becomes just like an ocean unagitated by waves. This very example is also cited in Bhagavad Gita. One should become like the ocean. The ocean is filled by many thousands of rivers, and millions of tons of its water evaporates into clouds, yet the ocean is the same unagitated ocean. The laws of nature may work, but if one is fixed in devotional service at the lotus feet of the Lord, he is not agitated, for he is introspective. He does not look outside to material nature, but he looks in to the spiritual nature of his existence. With a sober mind, he simply engages in the service of the Lord. Thus he realizes his own self without false identification with matter and without affection for material possessions. Such a great devotee is never in trouble with others because he sees everyone from the platform of spiritual understanding. He sees himself and others in the right perspective. Om agyana timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmei shri gurave namah shri chaitanya manobishtam stapitam yena bhutale svayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivashadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Dear devotees, thank you for coming to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. By hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, all perfection is to be attained, so we are all very fortunate to have the opportunity, and thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak about Krishna. That is very nice. Today's topic is renunciation in devotional life. You might be wondering a little bit about the verse that I chose. But I like this verse because this verse was speaking about the qualities that are naturally there for one who is renounced, and other things that I will go through and explain a little bit why I chose this verse. Do I need to read it again, or we're fine? Okay. Thus, he gradually became unaffected by the false ego of material identity, nirahan kritir, no false ego. He became detached of false ego. And became free from material affection, nirmamash. He understood it's not mine, nirmama. Undisturbed, equal to everyone, and without a duality, he could indeed see himself also. His mind was turned inward and was perfectly calm, like an ocean unagitated by waves. So I'm continuing the topic that Yogananda Swami was speaking on quite elaborately, taking in consideration that he did give a seminar on renunciation in modern Vaishnavism. I mean, that's just my interpretation of the title, so... So I could see that Maharaj spoke quite elaborately about renunciation, so to say, in a historical perspective, both within our sampradaya and in general. So I decided to take the same topic from a little bit of a different angle and speak about renunciation in a sense of personal practice or... place of renunciation in personal practices and also place of renunciation in relation to bhakti and what it means, what is renunciation for a devotee, what it is. So I wanted to focus a little bit on the, so to say, internal aspects of renunciation rather than external manifestation of renunciation. External manifestation of renunciation, which may be expressed in Varnashram Dharma, and we all know what that means, is not false. It is a manifestation, but genuine things are coming inward because we know that the matter is dependent on spirit and not vice versa. And that means that things that are within, if they're genuine, they will be manifested outside. So therefore, I wanted to speak a little bit about renunciation as in a sense of renunciation which is within and how, and then because Maharaj spoke a lot about the historical perspective. Just one second. So, about this verse, what I liked, this is, just to put it a little bit in the perspective, this is the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, and it speaks, this particular verse speaks about Kardama Muni just before he attained perfection. So Kardama Muni just renounced, practically renounced, I mean, renounced his householder life, or in other words, left his wife and son, who was never no less than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and went to the forest to meditate. And in due course of his meditation, these symptoms developed. So this is just to, and just after this verse, practically, the Bhagavatam describes his attainment of perfection. And so it is described by Acharyas that there are two ways to see things. One is, or in other words, there are two kinds of living entities. Ones are Bahirmukha, and the other ones are Antarmukha. And that means that ones are looking within, and the other ones are looking without. So Bahirmukha means the one, Mukha is the face, so it means one whose face is turned towards the outside world, in other words, towards the material manifestation and everything that it offers. So this is the Bahirmukha, and the scriptures, or our Acharya explains that we should become Antarmukha, or in other words, that we should look within, because within is not only our own self, but it's also Krishna as the super soul and much more than that. So I wanted to speak, as I was saying, about the renunciation in a sense of something that is developed in the heart. So speaking about renunciation, I was thinking a little bit like, where should I start? Should I first say renunciation in Vaishnavism doesn't exist? Because that's also true. Or renunciation in Vaishnavism is everything? Because that's also true. It's a little bit contradictory. I'll explain that. And or renunciation is a secondary principle. You can look at it with many different angles, but and the fact is that so why would I say that renunciation doesn't exist? Because Srila Prabhupada says so. He says, where is the place of renunciation? Everything is the property of the Lord. He speaks about the Ishavashya principle of Ishupanishad, and one who sees his own position, which is explained in this world, he saw his own position. So in order for renunciation to be genuine, one needs to realize one's own position and the position of the Supreme Lord, because then there's nothing to renounce, really. So because one sees what is there which is mine that I can renounce. There is nothing that is mine. Everything is the property of the Lord. So the only thing I can do is to become a servant. So... So in that spirit, renunciation doesn't really exist, because we have nothing to renounce. But in other sense, the Vaishnavism speaks about the supreme renunciation, and Srila Prabhupada, Bhagavad Gita speaks about renunciation also. Actually, in all of our scriptures, renunciation is mentioned, and the perfection of renunciation, which is the chapter of the name of the last chapter of Bhagavad Gita, speaks about renunciation, and Krishna is giving some definitions. What is renunciation? So, Krishna says that renunciation. Actually, Arjuna asks him, "What is renunciation? I would like to understand these things." So, Krishna says, "One who abandons all materially motivated activities is said to be a renounced, or in other words, a sannyasi. That's the word that is used. One who abandons materially motivated activity. And he says that renunciation is, in itself, is when we renounce all results of our activity. So we know in Bhagavad Gita, this is one of the main points, that one should not be attached to the results of activities. One has the... right to work, but doesn't have the right for the fruits of activities. So really, renunciation is abandonment of the fruits of activities. But even more, like, there's something even more to it than just to renounce the fruits of activities. And that is actually, Srila Prabhupada speaks about that. That is actually to renounce the fruit of spirit. That is really only possible when devotion is attained, that one needs to, real renunciation means to renounce the fruitive ideas, the fruitive mentality, that I'm doing this because I want a particular result for myself to enjoy. So renunciation really means to renounce the false ego. That's what we can renounce. You know, we don't have much to renounce externally. When we realize that nothing is ours, what can we renounce? But what we can aspire to renounce is to renounce the false ego and the so to say faulty things that come within the mind, like pride, envy, lust, things like that. This is what actually is to be renounced. And when these things are renounced, then the renunciation is genuine. And these things, we can see put in historical perspective, renunciation is often seen in terms of Varnashram Dharma. But what we're speaking here is that renunciation is something that is there for everybody. Is not only for a particular group of people. Renunciation is something that is a point that comes in culture of the soul. When one progresses on the spiritual path, renunciation is natural for everybody, and it's a part of eternal dharma of every living entity. Not only. Regardless of the external manifestations, we can see that it's explained in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that all the associates of Lord Chaitanya were perfectly renounced. All the associates of Lord Chaitanya were perfectly renounced, and we know half of them were not officially in a renounced order of life. Srila Prabhupada also said, I want every one of you to become sannyasis and goswamis, and it doesn't mean that everybody should wear a particular color. It just means that everybody should adopt this mentality of purity in intention, and that means to please Krishna and to try to you know renounce this fruitive mentality. So this is what it is, and that is obviously not an easy task, because mind is always there to propose likes and dislikes, and this is really what is to be renounced, because as long as mind is there, there will be likes and dislikes. I like this, I don't like this. These are all temporary things. So in pursuit of Krishna, one has to abandon these things. So what is important here, let's say from these words, is this nirahankara and nirmamash. Because we know that the main thing in material existence is I and mine. So what he's speaking here is that he lost that feeling that this is my material body and these are my possessions. So the question that comes is whether renunciation is really possible separately from devotional service, or whether renunciation comes before devotional service. Like whether one, in other words, do I first need to renounce and then practice devotional service? Do I first need to renounce whatever the, so to say, unfavorable habits are, or whatever is there that we see fit to be renounced, and then practice, or we need to practice and then renounce? And Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Srila Prabhupada also say that to first renounce and then practice devotional service will result in a fall down. That is practically impossible. That renunciation is a symptom of pure of devotional service, and that is very interesting, because sometimes there is a tendency to see renunciation as a separate thing. But renunciation is described as a symptom of bhava bhakti in Nectar of Devotion, the third quality that is third symptom of a person who has attained bhava, which is preliminary love of Krishna, is that he's detached. And it comes naturally. It's not something that needs to be obtained by some, so to say, artificial means. That doesn't mean that we don't need to control the mind, but the point is that if one endeavors for devotional service, then renunciation follows naturally. And there is a verse in Bhagavatam, which is a famous verse, that speaks about this, so I would like to read it, and just a sentence from the purport, if you don't mind. He says, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayanti Asho Vairagyam Jnanam Chaya Haitukam. By rendering devotional service under the personality of Godhead Shri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. So Srila Prabhupada speaks about some other things, and then he says, the principles of knowledge and detachment are two important factors on the path of transcendental realization. The whole spiritual process leads to perfect knowledge of everything material and spiritual, and the result of such perfect knowledge are that one becomes detached from material affection and becomes attached to spiritual activities. So the point that Srila Prabhupada makes is that as one progresses on a spiritual path, my point is one should go for the bhakti. This is what the goal is, and bhakti is followed by so many things. Everything is, if bhakti is attained, everything else is attained. Srila Prabhupada said, you can ocean can fulfill all the purposes of the small wells. Shri Radha Gopinath Ki Jai. So the point is that both knowledge and renunciation follow bhakti. And that is natural because one understands one's own position and detachment is natural because it is explained that, for example, Bharat Maharaj left, they speak about how Bharat Maharaj, who was a perfect king, who was in his youth, who had a beautiful wife and followers, who had all the opulence, renounced all of this to go to the forest to meditate on the Supreme Personality of Godhead and perform devotional service. And in this verse, it's explained that Bharat Maharaj left things, that he was so advanced that he left things as a person leaves stool after passing it. In other words, there wasn't difficulty. It was like he could see it as it is, therefore he could just immediately walk away. It wasn't that he had to cut, like his heart was already pure. So that's my point. If the heart is purified by devotional service, then one sees things as they are, and therefore renunciation is natural, because one is not anymore attracted by material illusion. So if we see material things as they are, then detachment is just a natural thing, because why would you be attached to something that is abominable? And material affection and relationships are abominable because at the bottom line, they're just based on selfishness. It sounds a little bit harsh, but the point is that if one establishes a spiritual relationships both with Krishna and with other living entities, then one can see that material relationships are very temporary and they're not so attractive. They become very easily. It's very easy to, if somebody offers you a high class situation, then it's very easy to renounce something that is low class. But if you don't have anything high class, then you're attached to the low class. So that is the principle. Everything is based on the higher taste. So that's why we should go for the bhakti, and renunciation is a natural follower of bhakti. I would like to just, yeah. So in our, maybe read, in our history there are various renunciates, both grihastas and sannyasis, who wrote about renunciation, and I wanted to read to you a little thing that there's one of our acharyas which is very famous by being renounced, and I don't know, should I play the quiz game or like who it is, or should I just say who it is? Who? Yeah, that's true, but I'm referring to a one of a later date. Gaur Kishore, yes, yes. Mother Jayabhadra is right. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji. So even in his Pranam Mantra, he's mentioned as the best renunciates. So, and so he said a few things about renunciation. He was very famous by being very, very renounced. But so I wanted to read you something that he says. He says, if one does not attain the spiritual energy given by the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, then one will become attached by his wife and offspring. He says, the distinctive feature of the renunciation, so this is spoken by somebody who knows it, the distinctive feature of the renunciation of a devotee of Krishna is it's not being diverted from him in any way. In other words, the main thing, the main quality that a genuine renunciate will display is uninterrupted attachment to Krishna. Performing like having this attachment which never breaks. It says, not being diverted from him, from Krishna in any way. Whatever happens, he still remains attached to Krishna. A real renunciate accepts whatever is favorable for the Lord's satisfaction and rejects whatever is unfavorable. So this is basically the main principle of renunciation in devotional life it's relevant to us because thoughts are a little bit helter-skeltered because I found so much good material on renunciation. I was like, where should I even start? It's such an ocean of things. Just 1 second, I lost myself. Yeah, so the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which is called Perfection of Renunciation, is perfected in a perfect verse that I just found out yesterday was the verse that Srila Prabhupada quoted the most, and that is Sarva Dharman Paritirja. So renunciation means to surrender everything to Krishna. And in explaining what this surrender means, the Acharyas explained that surrender means to accept what is favorable and to reject what is unfavorable. And this is renunciation. This is renunciation for a devotee. What is there to be renounced? So renunciation means to renounce your own whims of your own mind for a higher purpose. Follow the orders of the spiritual master, accept what is favorable, reject what is unfavorable. Once Pankajagri Prabhu said, that's it, that's what it is, that's what you need to do. Just accept what is favorable, reject what is unfavorable. And that is the definition. That is the definition of real renunciation, yukta vairagya, is that one should accept whatever is there at the moment that is favorable for Krishna, that has a connection with Krishna. Because it says, nirbandha Krishna sambandha. So nirbandha means, I have no attachment, nirbandha, no not. I'm not attached to this thing. Krishna sambandha, but because it has relationship with Krishna, I accept it. So that's the real, so that means whatever, because we don't know, we don't have the eyes, the scriptures are our eyes. So then if Rupa Goswami says that you should accept being enthusiastic and patient, then that is our renunciation, to be enthusiastic about devotional service. I mean, isn't that great? Because sometimes renunciation is often seen as something dry, boring, hard, things like that. But renunciation is blissful. If we read in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Sharanagati, which I prepared because I wanted to read one song out of it, he speaks about what happens when one actually surrenders. And that's, I mean, as far as I understand it, that's the real renunciation, surrender everything unto Krishna. And he speaks about the bliss that he never experienced before. He doesn't speak, oh, it's very hard for me now. And he's blissful. Renunciation is the best thing that can happen to everybody because you renounce things that are useless and you take things that are just how to say, incomparable with anything, so therefore renunciation is a blissful thing. So there are two books that speak about these favorable and unfavorable things. One is obviously the Upadeshamrita of Rupa Goswami, where he gives all instructions what should be renounced and what should be rejected, and the other one should be rejected and one should what should be accepted. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote Sharanagati, which elaborately describes not only what should be rejected, but he shares his realization how it is when that is rejected and how one progresses from the stage of bondage to the stage of perfect surrender. So I wanted to read one poem, which for me is like this poem is like personified renunciation, which is genuine. Please bear with me. It says, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, all that is there that may be indicated by the words aham and mam, I and my, I offer at your lotus feet, O merciful Lord. I no longer consider even myself to be mine. Now I have become exclusively yours. The soul inhabiting this material body has given up the false ego attached to the word I, for today the spiritual sense of being yours has entered his heart. All my possessions, body, home, servants, brothers, friends, wife, sons, personal belongings, fencing and gateways, all of these things are now yours, for I have become your servant. I am but a mere occupant in your house. You are the owner of the house, and I am your most obedient servant. My only activity now is endeavoring for your happiness. Whatever pious or impious activities that were performed by me, either with my gross or subtle bodies, are no longer mine, for I am redeemed. My will has become merged with your will. From this day forward, Bhaktivinoda has completely forgotten himself. So he speaks beautifully about how one abandons, even though that one still has desires and one works in devotion, one works for Krishna's pleasure. When he says, my will has merged with yours, that doesn't mean I have become impersonal. That just means that whatever you will is, because I wish your happiness, therefore whatever you will, I will as well. So... So this is what he speaks, and he speaks even, I mean, the point that, I don't know if it became evident or not, the point is that as one realizes one's real ego, one can abandon the false ego. That is the process. It's very hard to abandon something if you don't have anything else to hold on to. So therefore, as one practices bhakti, as the real ego develops, or in other words, becomes recognized or manifest, then one can abandon the false ego. And if we see who was called by a perfect renunciate by Lord Chaitanya? There were actually many glorious renunciates in our tradition, so it's very hard to play a guess game in this case. But there was a case that Lord Chaitanya said that there is no better renunciant than Ramananda Roy, because Ramananda Roy was able to see everything in a spiritual perspective. Ramananda Roy wrote this Jagannath Vala Banataka. It's a drama, and he wrote it for the pleasure of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Jagannath. And Ramananda Roy, whose eternal identity, which is revealed in the scriptures, is to be Vishakha Devi, the eternal associate of Radha and Krishna, and eternal servant. He wrote this drama, so he wanted to make this drama perfect. So therefore, because he knew the emotions, he knew the moods of spiritual world, and his service was to help and prepare other sakis for the lilas with Radha and Krishna. Therefore, what he did is he would train this. This drama was played by different girls, actresses, and which was traditional in that time. And he would spend days and days locked in a room with these girls, explaining to them how they need to display a particular dramatical mood in order to invoke a particular feeling in the viewer, which was meant to be Lord Jagannath and Lord Chaitanya, in order to be pleasing, to actually make these dramas perfect replicas of the spiritual realm. So it was quite inconceivable how a man can stay with these girls all day in a room. And it's explained by our acharyas, none of us is qualified to imitate something like that. But the point is why he was able to do that and be completely undisturbed, because he was acting from his real position. He could see, I'm the servant of Radha and Krishna, I'm the servant of these girls, and this is my service. So because he could see things in proper perspective, he wasn't agitated. And that is what this verse speaks about. The devotee is like an ocean. And that is explained by Bhagavad Gita. The devotee is like the ocean. Whatever waves come, he's not agitated. And once Burjan Prabhu explained why the devotee is not agitated, he says, why the ocean is not agitated? Why the ocean is not agitated? He said, the ocean is not agitated because it's deep. So if we're genuinely deep in devotional service, if if the relationship with Krishna is strong enough, then the waves of material hankerings and material desires will not agitate us. Srila Prabhupada says, as long as there is a material body, the material desires will come. As long as there is a material body, the material desires will come. But one who is fixed upon Krishna is steady and is not agitated by these things. So in any case, that's basically the story of renunciation. And there's only one question which is left for the end, and that is, how can we really attain it in a practical way? And in last class, when Maharaj was speaking, I made a little comment which somehow or other was being instrumental of me being sitting here today. But so I told in short this story about how Gyan and Vairagya are the sons of bhakti, or knowledge and renunciation are the sons of bhakti. So I was trying real hard to find the complete story, and I couldn't find it. But then just today morning I found it. I was really happy because I wanted to tell you the story. The story is from the Padma Purana. And this story explains the main point that is underlined by all our acharyas, and that is that renunciation and knowledge are dependent on bhakti. So in the story, the main characters are Narada Muni and Bhakti Devi. So before Narada Muni came to the picture, Bhakti Devi came to Lord Krishna and she said, Kim Karomi, what can I do for you? How can I serve you? In other words, so Krishna said, please, will you nourish my devotees? He gave this service to Bhakti Devi. Will you nourish my devotees? And she said, yes, with great pleasure. And she left to do her service. And Krishna gave her a maidservant. So the maidservant of Bhakti was who? Mukti. The maidservant of Bhakti that Krishna gave to the Bhakti Devi was liberation personified. And she was just a maidservant. And then he also gave, Lord Krishna also gave to Bhakti Devi two sons. One was Gyan, or knowledge. The other one was Vairagya, or renunciation. So Bhakti Devi had these two sons. And it's very interesting, you know, because sons are something, you know, when they're small you breastfeed them. That means they're completely dependent. It means that Gyan and Vairagya are completely dependent on bhakti. And especially we want to, if we're starting from nothing, we're starting from zero, we want to develop. it just needs to be nourished by bhakti. There's no other way. Like, how can a baby survive if a mother doesn't feed him? There's no other way. So, in other words, there's no way we can develop any renunciation of knowledge unless we perform genuine bhakti. So anyway, to continue the story. in their, goings or whatever, it's explained that they were from South India, so they were traveling and doing this and that. And in their travels, both of them got very exhausted and sick, and they were on the verge of leaving their body. But as they were going from south to the north, Bhakti, when they came to Vrindavan Dham, Bhakti naturally immediately revived her life, because in Vrindavan, it's explained in Vrindavan, Bhakti naturally dances. But Gyan and Vairagya were still on the edge of leaving their bodies. So in Vrindavan, Bhakti Devi meets Narada Muni, and she says, "Oh, great sage, please help me. We have these difficulties. My sons are just about to leave their bodies. Can you please find some remedy?" And so Narada Muni says, yes, I will try my best. And he sits and he starts reading all different scriptures to the Gyan and Vairagya, and reciting all different shlokas. So it's explained Gyan and Vairagya slowly start a little bit blinking and moving their limbs, but they're still quite sick. So it helps a little, but not very much. They're still lying down. So then Narada Muni thinks, what should I do? And he meets a sadhu, and sadhu tells him, who was the sadhu? I forgot. The sadhu tells him, no, you should go and take, it's in Srimad Bhagavatam Mahatmya, so he said, you should go and take Srimad Bhagavatam and you should read Srimad Bhagavatam to them, because Srimad Bhagavatam speaks about pure devotional service. So Narada Muni takes Srimad Bhagavatam and he sits in front of them, and as he sits and he's about to narrate Srimad Bhagavatam, all the demigods and all the different sages from the whole universe start gathering. You know, it's like whenever the Bhagavatam is recited by such a great soul, so many demigods and sages gather. It's like a fifth Naimisharanya. So all of them gathered in Vrindavan, they take seats, so then he starts reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And as he reads Srimad Bhagavatam, everybody becomes so ecstatic that they start a spontaneous kirtan. So they start a spontaneous kirtan, and it's explained that Indra is playing mridanga and Brahma is playing kartals, and I'm not even imagining this, it's in a story. And they all take the instruments and start making this tumultuous kirtan, and everybody gets ecstatic, and in one point they already forgot about Gyan and Vairagya. They all become so absorbed. So in one point they look at Gyan Vairagya, and Gyan Vairagya together with Bhakti are dancing high, jumping high in kirtan. So they could understand this is the real thing. So the thing is that if we want anything in life, this is also the process for us. Hear Srimad Bhagavatam and perform kirtan with devotees. And with that note, I will finish. I just want to read a quick quote from Gaur Kishore Das Babaji that speaks about the same thing. It says, "Those actually desirous of performing Hari Bhajan, but in whose hearts the weeds of material desires grow, and who are unable to give up excessive attachment to wife and children," you can translate that into anything that we're attached to, "should also come and hear from the pure devotees, chant Hare Krishna, and perform congregational chanting. In this way, they can quickly become detached from the inclination to enjoy their wives and children." So, I'm sorry if it was a little bit here and there, and maybe not clear. My points were maybe not structured the best, but that's what came out. Thank you very much for your attention. If there is any comments, questions, or anything else.
Thank you.
No, I was thinking about these things as well. I mean, there are so many questions. Why would Kardama Muni live? Like, his son was the god himself. I mean, so I was thinking also about these things. Why would these things be renounced? But Srila Prabhupada speaks, and he's very firm. He says, in one stage, one should renounce. He says, in Vanaprastha stage, one should renounce. And I think that also it has to do with time. Because if Bharat Maharaj wasn't completely detached already while he was a grihastha, he couldn't have left it as one leaves too. Because he would have to like go through what Dhritarashtra went. You know, Vidura came and he had to cut it out with his words and everything like that. But nobody had to cut it out for Bharat Maharaj. It was already finished for him. Like he was performing, because that's what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, renunciation in the mode of goodness is performing your duty because it is duty. It ought to be done. So that's renunciation in the mode of goodness. And so Bharat Maharaj wasn't attached already as he was there. But the point is that Srimad Bhagavatam, what I could see is that Srimad Bhagavatam makes a point. In one point, one should go and be exclusively devoted to Krishna. Take all your energy and give it to Krishna. Because there is a certain thing with exclusivity in devotion to Krishna. There is a certain thing that in one point one should externally manifest or show this exclusivity. In one point, this is the culture of Bhagavatam. Things progress and you're getting purified, but in one point everything should be renounced, and that's Sarva Dharma and Parityaja. Just give everything. So that can be done. That is obviously to be done internally, and that is the main point. That this needs to be done internally. But in one point, externally, it also needs to be done because it's a matter of time. Because if you're dealing with so many things, then how much time do you have for exclusive focus? So in one point, it is to be done. And actually, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Gaurakishore Das Babaji and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Srila Prabhupada speak about the Markata Vairagis, the unqualified persons who give up things. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says there is four groups of Markata Vairagis. Or in other words, false renunciates. So one of these groups are people who renounce material life or renounce family life because they're unhappy with it, basically. They're frustrated. My wife doesn't make me happy, so therefore I renounce it. Or I'm frustrated with it, therefore... He says that will never last. He says that will lead to a fall down, because you will renounce it, then you will go for it again. And that's like, in scriptures it explains, that's like eating your own vomit. You vomit it, then you eat it again. So that's what happens if renunciation is not genuine. But if one goes through the process, if one goes through the process and gets purified, then in one point, one is, if I may say, a little bit disgusted with the whole thing. Because that's what Srila Prabhupada says. He says, if one is not disgusted, one can't renounce. He says, one cannot be really renounced until one actually becomes disgusted with material activity and sees it as a stumbling block to spiritual advancement. Renunciation should not be falgu, temporary, but should exist throughout one's life. So renunciation is something that is to be cultivated in a sense, or in another sense, it grows. And in one point, if one is genuine, this desire to spend time exclusively in devotional service, in unadulterated devotional service, will naturally manifest in the heart of a sadhaka. It will naturally come. That one just becomes so eager for Krishna that in one point he does his supreme duty, so to say, and that is surrender everything unto Krishna. But there is nothing faulty with maintaining the kingdom as he was. So my point is, there is nothing fault. It's not about his family. It's about Krishna. That's the point. The point is, nothing was wrong with his family. Nothing was wrong with his environment. And that's why the sages are so much amazed. Nothing was wrong, because usually people renounce because something is wrong. So that's not a real renunciation. But real renunciation is his desire becomes so intense that he decides that. Two of them are like super external. Like, one renounces things because when he goes to a gathering of sadhus, they will feed him. One is, he renounces because he's frustrated. I may remember, but there are two more. Yeah, one is for fame, that's true. One is for fame, and one is something else, also like quite material. Yeah, one is, I think that yeah. For this one, that the one who renounces because he's basically not deriving sense gratification out of it, it says that it's a temporary renunciation. This is this Falgu. The other three groups are even worse, because this one is closest to a genuine renunciation, because there is some desire to renounce. The other three don't have any desire to renounce. They have a desire to enjoy completely. I mean, this is also covered enjoyment, but there is some desire to renounce it. And actually, it's so funny, because this whole world, everybody comes here, everybody thinks it's a place for enjoyment, and it's a place for renunciation. Everything is set to frustrate you. Everything is in this world is set to frustrate you. That means, like, you're here to learn renunciation. Everybody comes and thinks, oh, I will enjoy. And then this is what happens, yeah. But yeah. I hope that was okay. Yeah. It's very interesting. Well, the thing is that what Gorky Shardas Babaji is speaking, or what Srila Prabhupada is speaking, the renunciation is a continuum. So that means it starts from the first moment you see Krishna. Because in the next verse of where Bharat Maharaj's renunciation is explained, he explained that he was able to be so renounced because he was so attracted by Krishna's opulence, fame, beauty, and everything else. He was just focused on Krishna. So the point is that to start even the slightest devotional service, there must be some attraction. There must be some attraction that is sometimes called fate in the beginning. You know, it's a tinge of attraction. So everything, like a baby, like you have a baby in a womb, everything starts developing all at once in one sense. And then it develops more and more and more. In the beginning, it's like a formless thing, and it starts growing and growing, and in one point becomes complete form. So also with all these qualities in devotional life, they all are there innate in the beginning of devotional service, but they're unmanifested. It's like a green mango. So then it grows and grows, the baby grows, so our devotional practices grow, and then from Vaidhi Bhakti they can progress. But even in Vaidhi Bhakti, there must be some renunciation. There is some which is done because of the words of the scriptures, and there is some that come naturally as a result of the first one. And they're both there in Vaidhi Bhakti. But as one progresses, the things become more formed. So that's why, for example, these stages of devotional service, it's not that, I mean, first of all, each one of them includes the other, the previous one. But the other thing is that it's not black and white. It's not like you're jumping from one pot to another pot. It's a continuum, but in one point, certain things become so prominent that they can be called a name already. So in Bhava Bhakti, this quality of detachment becomes so strong and prominent that you can name it. But that doesn't mean that it wasn't there before. It's a growth. That's my understanding. Okay, 1, 2, 3. We don't have much time. Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu, you can say when it's over, or how much we can, I mean. Anyway, Mark. What he speaks about renunciation, the point is when renunciation can lead to a fall down. Renunciation can lead to a fall down when it's performed separately from bhakti. And when, for the sake of renouncing, one sacrifices practices of bhakti. So if renunciation goes hand in hand by bhakti, one will not fall down. Even if we're speaking about Vaidhi platform, that's fine. Because that's to be done, because one has to get some training, certain like things, because spiritual life is not spontaneous for us, because we're too long in this material world. Then we have to start by a push in one sense, and that's Vaidhi Bhakti. It has to be a little bit mechanical in the beginning. So it's not a problem to perform renunciation in a conditioned stage, external renunciation in conditioned stage. Problem is to perform external renunciation and to not perform bhakti. So if one performs bhakti, then naturally renunciation will be fed. But if it's only renunciation, then one becomes proud. In bhakti, renunciation means becomes humble. Trinandapi sunichana, that's renunciation. I am humble and I tolerate. That's what you renounce. You renounce your whole thing that you want respect, that you want, you know, others to serve you, that you're not tolerant. So renunciation, that's fine as long as it's followed by bhakti. But if it's only renunciation, one becomes proud, it's a first symptom. If the renunciation and bhakti are not linked, one will become proud. And that's a sign of material renunciation, or in other words, fake. I don't know if it was clear, but my point is that it's... Yeah. But you see, the problem is not so much in fall downs. The problem is, like, the thing is that if you fall down, you stand up and you walk again. So real fall down is when you fall down and you don't get up. That's a fall down. If somebody falls down, it's like a kid. He starts to walk, he falls down. He falls down so many times. But if a kid falls down and lies down there forever, then something is wrong with the kid. But if he gets up, in one point he will learn how to walk. So we cannot expect that we will come from conditional stage to perfectional stage without fall downs. Fall downs are there for a purpose. But if one doesn't get up, then it's a sign of lack of enthusiasm or something else, and then it's a problem. Because if one repents, it's explained, if one repents, then practically all of Krishna practically, you know, says it's fine. If one genuinely repents, he's fall down. Anyway, Vishambhai. Family frustration. I mean, you could say so, but out of those, it's like there are two groups. One is genuine and one is not genuine. Then in a not genuine group, you can maybe make a classification, but it's not like one the same thing that just goes and grows. Because from a fake renunciation, the genuine one will never grow out. It's like a dead plant. It will never grow. So there are certain things that are genuine renunciation, which is not... big enough to be seen, or not ripe enough, or not mature enough. But it's genuine. So if one is sincere, Krishna gives intelligence, therefore in due course of time, one will get to a fruit. But if you start with a dead plant, which is renunciation out of material gain, you will never get the fruit. It's cheating. If you try to cheat Krishna, I mean, sorry, but he's smarter than you. You know, it's not going to work. It's not going to fructify in one point and become like a higher stage. That's what happens if you start, like what Mark was saying, if you start with Vaidhi Bhakti, then you may expect in the future, in due course of time, to get a spontaneous renunciation, a genuine stage of renunciation. But if you start with faking it, then you will never get anywhere. Because Lord Chaitanya rejected heavily. Because, I mean, that's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Lord Chaitanya, and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati were fighting so much. People who fake renunciation. It's explained, they're like monkeys. You know, monkeys, they look like they don't have clothes. They live on the trees, they don't have houses, you know. But they have so many wives. And it's not that they're married. So there's so many renunciates, there were so many renunciates in the past which displayed the same things. So, but yeah, I mean, Bhaktivinoda Thakur doesn't classify it. He says these are the four groups. But it's obvious that one of them is a little bit more, kind of higher, because it's not done completely in a deceitful mood. Mukti, genuine renunciation is mukti. Because mukti means no false ego. Well, that's really true only if prema is there, that there is no false ego. But mukti means to be freed from these material attachments and everything like that. So that's renunciation. You can say mukti is a fruit of renunciation. You could say like that. It's a, like a result of renunciation is liberation. If you renounce things properly, then you will be... But you will never be able to renounce things properly unless you perform devotional service. Your renunciation will be short-lasting. It has an end. If there is no devotional service, whatever it is, it has an end. Well, like, depends what I mean, it's a bona fide goal in a Vedic sense, but if you're going for pure devotion, then, you know, Goswamis, they saved, by Srinivas Acharya, they saved people from the devouring mouth of liberation. There is another in, I think now it's with Bhava Taranga, that mukti personified comes in front of Bhaktivinoda Thakur in meditation. He's frightened like anything. And she comes and she says, "What is this? You know, this movement of Lord Chaitanya, everybody is happy, everybody gets some service and I don't get any service. Everybody rejects me. I'm liberation, you know. Everybody became devotees, nobody wants to have anything to do with me, give me some service." So that's kind of the thing for liberation. Anyway, I think that we should end, and then if there's something, we can do it outside. Thank you very much. Jai Srila Prabhupada. Shalom Prabhupada ki jai.